Devaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Continuing this morning with Canto 3, Chapter 21. Which is called Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. And we're going to be reading texts 5, 6, and 7. And, 5, 6, and 7. So, how did the chapter begin? Can anybody remember? It was so long ago. Our memories in Kali Yuga are pretty weak. It's a conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, where, going back to the previous chapter, 20, Vidura inquired, in the process of creation, after the Sarga portion, what Mahavishnu did for the purpose of creation. Then there's this Sarga portion, that's what Lord Brahma does. And certain things were done by Lord Brahma. What did he do next? Specifically, what did Svayambhuva Manu and the other Prajapatis, direct sons of Lord Brahma, such as Marichi, what did they do to help further the process of creation? So, this is just review. Maitreya appreciated the nice question and the qualification of Vidura in general. And then he did a little review on what Mahavishnu does, and then to bring about creation. And then he went into what Lord Brahma did at the beginning of creation. And then he spoke very quickly, just covered some territory, on many events following Brahma's creation. Then chapter 21, he's now answering the question is from the beginning of chapter 20. Svayambhuva Manu appeared. And there's a lineage of kings to give this empty shell of the universe some population. So the modes of nature during the period of cosmic annihilation, they're dormant. Karma is suspended. Time is withdrawn. Everything is in this latent, undifferentiated state, pradhan. The glance of Mahavishnu agitates pradhan, and the elements separate out, and the time energy is acting in various ways. Details another time, though the details are there. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters within each of the innumerable universes, Lord Brahma appears, and then several things happen. So, Svayambhuva Manu is the first of the four Manus, first of the 14 Manus. And so, text one is describing lineage from Svayambhuva Manu, just mentioning it. The next verse is mentioning Priyavrata and Uttanapada, the two sons who ruled the world during the reign of Svayambhuva Manu. And then he mentions in text 3 the daughter, or one of the three daughters. So two sons, three daughters. Devahuti's name is mentioned. And the son of Lord Brahma, Kardama, who Devahuti married, is also mentioned. in Vidura's question, he said, you mentioned something some time ago about Devahuti, Kardama Muni, Lord of the created beings. So now comes... then the last verse we read was, how many offspring did that great yogi, Kardama, beget through the princess, Devahuti, who was endowed with eightfold perfection in the yoga principles? He was, Kardama was endowed with the eightfold perfection, but also Devahuti was, as we read, she was described in the verse as a yoga lakshana. She had the characteristics of a great yogi. So then we discussed producing good offspring requires good consciousness from mother and father, and the opposite is the opposite happens. When consciousness is not elevated, then the other kind of prajna are produced. And then there's some discussion about, you know, why on earth is a topic about childbearing, which is involved in affairs of the material energy, going on in this remote discussion between Vidura and Maitreya. Why are they talking about, you know, babies and family lineage? And the answer is because it's going back and back and back. It's in relation to Krishna. Because Krishna desired the creation, so the creation had a purpose. Good praja is needed to lead the citizens, people in general, to the path of elevation. So, and there's a means for achieving that, and that's the purpose that is here. So, with that review, text 5, Vidura is continuing to speak to Maitreya, O holy sage, tell me how the worshipful Ruchi and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generated children after securing their wives, as their wives, the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. So again, same question. What's going on? We're talking about marriages and children. And how did they do it? How many children did they have? Purport. All the great personalities who increased the population in the beginning of the creation are called Prajapatis. Brahma is a Prajapati. Swayambhuva Manu, Prajapati. Daksha, Prajapati. So Prajapati is a post or a title, someone who particularly has the service of expanding the population on earth for the purpose of serving the Lord's interest, not some other reason. Swayambhuva Manu had two daughters. Actually, he had three daughters. Devahuti, Akuti, and Prasuti. So, Prajapati Ruchi married Akuti, and Daksha married Prasuti. These couples and their children produced immense numbers of children to populate the entire universe. Vidura's inquiry was, how did they beget the population in the beginning? Meaning, what standards did they apply to produce good population so that we can know how to produce good offspring? The great sage Maitreya replied, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the worlds, the worshipful Kardama Muni practiced penance on the bank of the river Saraswati for a period of 10,000 years. It's a long time to do anything. We discussed this a little bit with other examples from the Bhagavatam, that the service of producing children indeed is a service. It's not just a convenience or a license or something. It's a service. And the service, according to scripture, is to receive a soul and assist the soul in achieving release from the cycle of birth and death. That's a pretty important service. And there's a procedure involved, and there's consciousness that's required in order to do the service properly. So those that understand what the purpose is, they qualify themselves before doing that service or any service. And so this, like, one-tenth of one's lifetime, this 10,000 years, for those who live 100,000 years, that's one-tenth. So supposing somebody lives for 100 years, I mean, that's pretty rare in Kali Yuga to live 100 years. But supposing somebody lived for 100 years, that means you want to get married for 10 years, you qualify yourself. And like, nothing else but, at least in the paradigm of Maitreya, excuse me, Kardama Muni, and others. So we may not, like, carve out 10 years of our life. Okay, now I finished my studies and now I want to get married, so for 10 years I'm going to go somewhere and qualify myself to get married. But the application of the principle is something that surely must be done in order to be qualified to do that service properly. That's the message that we should take. And Kardama Muni, it's not mentioned here, because it just is bringing his name up, but elsewhere, in this third canto, earlier, and the part that Lord Brahma did, it mentions 10 great sages. So, first the four Kumaras, and then Lord Shiva, then Swayambhuva Manu, and then these 10 sages, Atri, Angira, and so forth. And they're born from different parts of the body of Brahma. And number 11 out of the 10, just like he's an add-on, is Kardama. And he's born from the shadow of Brahma. Some are born from the mind, some are born from the heart, some are born from the limbs, some are born from other parts of the body of Lord Brahma. Kardama is born from the shadow. So he's a direct son. As mentioned here also, the two other daughters of Swayambhuva Manu were married to direct sons of Lord Brahma, under Brahma's order. So in the case of Devahuti, it wasn't directly Lord Brahma's order. It was that it was the decision of Devahuti. And that's going to come up later, how that arrangement was made. But first it's just describing Kardama receiving an order from his father to assist him in producing good praja to populate the universe. He consented, and he went to a sacred place, deep into the forest, along the bank of the Saraswati River, and practiced penances, tapa, like the Brahma did, tapa. Now the penance of Brahma, you'll find out by hearing the presentation on Sri Brahma Samhita. His particular penance was chanting of his mantra. what's mentioned in the Bhagavatam is he heard three times, tapa, tapa, tapa. In the Brahma Samhita, it specifically says, at that time he also heard some instruction from Saraswati. And there's this interesting concept in Brahma Samhita that there are not demigoddesses and demigods, but there's prototype, like even before there's a creation. Because demigods, without going into it too much, demigods are supervising things within the universe. But there are prototype demigods before there's even a universe to supervise. Before even Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters into the universe and Brahma appears and then demigods are produced. So this Saraswati that instructed Brahma in the chanting of his mantra is another name for, or an expansion of, or an aspect of the internal potency of the Lord. Mahavishnu has a internal potency whose name is Rama, just like Lakshmi Narayan or Sita Ram or Radha Krishna. It's Rama Vishnu. And Rama has various names or aspects of her, and Saraswati is that internal potency of Mahavishnu, who then gave the mantra, our Gopal mantra, that's in our Gayatri mantras within our Sampradaya. And she, Saraswati, instructed Brahma, this is your tapa. Chant this mantra, and by so doing, it will fulfill all your desires. So, here it's mentioned, Kardama, being instructed by Brahma to do a particular service, he prepared himself to do that service by performance of tapa. And you'll hear in the purport Prabhupada speaking about the Yuga Dharma for Satya Yuga is meditation. So along with meditation, he performed bhakti, or he performed his meditation in the mood of, or as an expression of bhakti. And so that meant he also engaged in hearing and chanting and other forms of bhakti, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Not just meditation, and there wasn't anything else. And so here's the purport. It is understood herein that Kardama Muni meditated in yoga for 10,000 years before attaining perfection. Similarly, we have information that Valmiki Muni also practiced yoga meditation for 60,000 years before attaining perfection. Therefore, yoga practice can be successfully performed by persons who have a very long duration of life, such as 100,000 years. Semicolon. In that way, it is possible to have perfection in yoga. Otherwise, there is no possibility of attaining real perfection. Following the regulations, controlling the senses, and practicing the different sitting postures are merely preliminary practices. We do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system, in which it is stated that simply by meditating 15 minutes daily, one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. Prabhupada didn't like that cheating. This age, Kali Yuga, is the age of bluffing and quarrel. Actually, there is no possibility of attaining yoga perfection by such paltry proposals. The Vedic literature, for emphasis, clearly states three times that in this age of Kali, Kalo, Nascheva, 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 there is no other alternative. No other alternative, no other alternative than Harir Nama, chanting the holy name of the Lord. There were occasions when Prabhupada explained that I'm an old man, so I can speak like this, like very strongly, and you cannot. So he was saying, don't imitate. We can speak strongly, but maybe not, you know, in an imitating way, strongly, just like dismissing the nonsense of cheating processes. We can speak the truth, and we have to be careful how we speak the truth, and we should not imitate how Prabhupada would speak. But he would, at times, so strong. Whew. And then sometimes devotees would imitate, and it didn't get the same result. They didn't have the purity, didn't have the level of Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada was putting it really simply, I'm old, I can say these things. But we should be clear, at least, when he's not saying what it is, but it's transcendental meditation. Sometimes Prabhupada would indirectly refer to something without naming the name of the person. He would just describe the principle. In fact, I'll make mention of this. In training his disciples how to address deviations, he suggested, don't name the name of the person who's doing the deviation, because by so doing, you're giving credit to that person. Rather, he said, if you're asked about so-and-so, what is your opinion about so-and-so, here's how you reply. He said, what is it that they are teaching? What's their ideology? What's their message? And then you don't speak about the person, you speak about the ideology or the message. And you know, in principle, address a deviant ideology or message. So you leave the person to the side, and you address the principle. And he's doing that here, without naming the name. I just happen to know because it was popular for a while, that this person coming from India with a long beard and, you know, nice smile, he was saying to people, give me $30, chant this mantra, and you become one with God. And you can do all kinds, you can levitate, you can, you know, you can do really cool things. Just give me $30 and chant the mantra. And it's a secret mantra, you can't tell anybody. After some time, some of the people that were practicing that transcendental meditation came in contact with Krishna consciousness, and then they disclosed to Prabhupada what the mantra was that they were chanting. And the mantra was just a bija mantra, taken directly from the Vedas, and there are different, like Om is one, and there are others. So that's what he gave them, a bija mantra that they were supposed to chant 15 minutes and become one with God, or become, you know, something. So Prabhupada didn't like the business, take the mantra, give some money. That's not Vedic. Never was that ever Vedic. And the pretense, here he's addressing 15 minutes each day idea, and you become one with God. What cheating? What to speak of, become one with God? It takes to become successful in yoga, as being indicated in this verse and other places. It requires prolonged. This tapa is, using our example from yesterday, it's making the wet wood dry before you put the wood into the fire, before the fire will ignite. The wet wood needs to become dry. It's like when cutting a tree. The practice is, besides, making, they call it a cord, C-O-R-D, of wood. There's a certain, volume, a standard measure of wood. But it has to dry first, because there's moisture and fluid in the wood. And you can't use it. If you try to use it, it just makes smoke, at least initially, until it drives the water out. So it can't ignite. But when the wood is made dry, then it can ignite very quickly. Tapa is for that purpose. It's not in and of itself, be austere or do austerities and you become something. And that's mentioned in the next verse, text 7. Meaning, devotional service must also be directly an element. Otherwise, tapa alone or meditation alone. And there's so many verses in the Bhagavatam that say, "It not by this or that or that or the other thing or the other thing or the other thing can you realize Krishna." Because they are simply means to, using this metaphor again, making wet wood dry. Prabhupada calls them high-grade activities, or things that are recommended in the Vedas. Someone may be really incredibly capable of tapasya, or very incredibly capable of giving in charity, or something. And people go, whoa. Which is, it's nice. But what's the purpose behind the charity, or the austerity, or the meditation, or the something? It's to awaken, it's making the wet wood dry, so then it can ignite. And the igniting is Krishna consciousness. So you'll hear this in this next purport. Text 7. During that period of penance, the sage Kardama, by worship, through devotional service, in trance, propitiated the personality of Godhead, who is the quick bestower of all blessings upon those who flee to him for protection. Nice verse. Vara dashusham, the bestower of all blessings. Prapana, to the surrendered souls. Harim Bhakti is in the verse. So, purport. The significance of meditation is described here. That's another one of the high-grade activities that helps make the wet wood dry. Kardama Muni practiced mystic yoga meditation for 10,000 years just to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Therefore, whether one practices yoga or speculates and does research to find God, one's efforts must be mixed with the process of devotion. Conversely, without devotion, nothing can be perfect. The target of perfection and realization is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said that one who constantly engages in Krishna consciousness is the topmost yogi. Who knows the verse? Yogi now? Okay. last verse of chapter 6. The personality of Godhead, Hari, also fulfills the desires of his surrendered devotee. One has to surrender unto the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, Hari, or Krishna, in order to achieve real success. Devotional service, or engagement in Krishna consciousness, is the direct method, and all other methods, although recommended, are indirect. In this age of Kali, the direct method is especially more feasible than the indirect, because people are short-lived, their intelligence is poor, and they are poverty-stricken and embarrassed by so many miserable disturbances. Who knows that verse? Trying now? That's from Canto 1, Chapter 1. The questions by the sages, they're stating Kali Yuga's all these bad things, and therefore then the question comes, what's the means for achieving perfection in this age? What can be... People don't have the capacity to understand the Vedas and follow the message of the Vedas. So please summarize. What's the essence of the message of the Vedas? Lord Chaitanya therefore has given the greatest boon in this age. One simply has to chant the holy name of God to attain perfection in spiritual life. End of paragraph. And then the last paragraph. The word samprapade harim means that in various ways Kardava Muni satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, by his devotional service. Devotional service is also expressed by the word kriya yogena. What does kriya yogena mean? Kriya, I mentioned this yesterday, kriya, 2 days ago. Kriya shakti. It's the energy of activity. Kriya means to do or activity. It's very similar to karma, but it's even more specific. Karma refers to the action, reaction, and kriya is the force of activity. So kriya yogena is when your actions are directed in devotion to the Supreme. Devotional service is also expressed by the word kriya yogena. Kardava Muni not only meditated, but also engaged in devotional service. To attain perfection in yoga practice or meditation, one must act in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. The 9 processes of bhakti must accompany the meditation process. So meditation is the means of achieving perfection in Satya Yuga. We mentioned that already. For perfection to come, it must be, it's not optional, must be connected with devotional service, which is of those 9 varieties. It must be, otherwise it isn't going to yield the desired result, the fruit. Remembering is meditation also. But who is to be remembered? One should remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only must one remember the Supreme Person, one must hear about the activities of the Lord and chant his glories. This information is in the authoritative scriptures. After engaging himself for 10,000 years in performing different types of devotional service, Kardava Muni attained the perfection of meditation. But that is not possible in this age of Kali. So perfection, he saw the personality of Godhead, like that kind of perfection. Not like, oh, I feel good now. All my anxieties are gone. He saw the personality of Godhead. But that is not possible in this age of Kali, wherein it is very difficult to live for as much as 100 years. At the present moment, who will be successful in the rigid performance of the many yoga rules and regulations? Moreover, perfection is attained only by those who are surrendered souls. Where there is no mention of the personality of Godhead, where is their surrender? Just a comment from my experience in colleges. This past April, I spent a lot of time in colleges. And there's a new wave, that is an interest in meditation, as there was for the last number of years, 5-6 years, maybe longer, a wave of interest in yoga. And of course, when people think of yoga, they think of asanas. It doesn't matter what name you give it, like an adjective. Mantra yoga, bhakti yoga. When people hear the word yoga, put up posters. It wasn't like this before. Just put up a poster on, the science of bhakti yoga, and they just come to hear the science of bhakti yoga. You put up a sign now that says mantra yoga or bhakti yoga, and they all come in their leotards and their yoga mats, because that's what they want, and that's what they associate the word yoga with. We had this, just a little story. Badahari Prabhu was attending one of our retreats in Gitanagari. So we decided to connect the Gitanagari retreat with a first of the year in September, because it was Labor Day weekend, a campus-wide promotion of mantra yoga retreat going to the Gitanagari farm. And somehow it happened that the university thought this was a really great idea, and they approved a big banner, 10-foot banner, and just several feet high, to go over the arch, along the arch, it's like the main entrance to campus. So for, a week or more, huge banner, Mantra Yoga Retreat, the Gitanagari Yoga Farm. That's what they call it now, the Gitanagari Yoga Farm. And a lot of students signed up. And when they came, they thought they're going to get a hatha yoga class. So they brought out their yoga mats and, as Jai Jagannath put it, the girls started taking off their pants. Because then underneath they had their yoga, whatever you call them, leotards. And it was like... And, they're ready for yoga class. And there's Badahari looking around. And he's got his harmonium. And this is a nice story. You'll like it. Because he had done this before, with yoga groups. So he started singing very slowly and very softly, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, very, very pleasantly, serenely, meditatively. And I was seated, in a circle, and I was seated in the circle and looking at the students leaning over to each other and whispering something. And I asked one of the devotees what were they saying. He said, "Is this about God?" And you could feel the tension, I'm out of here. So we got the vibration, and we said, the sign said mantra yoga retreat. Now, you apparently didn't connect the mantra part. You're just like yoga retreat. So you came, let's do a little, what you guys want is hatha yoga, right? Yeah, we want Hatha Yoga. Okay. We're going to completely change the schedule. We're just like, do a complete change. Tomorrow morning, where it says some other stuff, it's going to be Hatha Yoga. And then it's going to be breakfast. And then it's going to be Hatha Yoga. So, you know, we'll give you what your expectation was. Fortunately, there was a devotee, Hari Kirtan, that is a yoga instructor. And he knew how to give them a Hatha Yoga class. So, you know, they relaxed a little bit. You could feel that, okay, we'll stick around and see if we want to stay around. So they stayed next morning. And then it went from Hatha Yoga, breakfast, then a break, then Hatha Yoga. Then he has this other thing that he calls moving yoga instead of just sitting. I don't know, I didn't watch. And then he goes, you know, some other thing, like sound yoga. He didn't call it mantra. Or they chant Om. You know, it helps you concentrate in your yoga practice. And by the time they got to Om chanting, you know, they were relaxed. Their defenses were down and they were feeling pretty good about things. Plus, you know, the magic of Gita Nagari was also there. And then Badahari came in for the evening session. And now, you know, they were fine. So he did, you know, I forget which other, but you know, wasn't Hare Krishna some other melody, some other mantra, and very soft. And they were fine with it. And so then, you know, he shrugged his shoulders and started very softly just moving into Hare Krishna mantra. They were fine with it. And then he stopped. And they did like devotees sometimes do. It was really amazing. It was more, 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 like in unison chanting, more, more. So he said, okay. And then he, you know, chanted just another Hare Krishna melody. And then the tempo started to pick up. These people had never seen devotees dance, but they all stood up and started to dance. Just like devotees do. You know, like back and forth and back and forth and then around in a circle. And just the same thing. It was amazing. And Badahari saw that and he just, again, shrugged his shoulders and just let it go. And they were dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. And chanting. You know, and a big round of applause at the end. Just from association. Whereas before their expectation was minus Krishna, then it became Krishna. And minus the yoga. Minus the Hatha yoga part. No, it was a very amazing experience. The power of association. And Hari Kirtan was very adept at taking them through those stages too, I must say. So here Prabhupada is saying, even one may be very expert at the regulations and the techniques of meditation and yoga, but without mention of God, without mention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it can't be called yoga. You know the purport of that last verse of chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada, because Krishna says, previous verses is, by all means be a yogi, and then the best of all yoga is, Shraddhavan, Bhajate Yomam, with faith, engaging in my devotional service. So in that purport, Prabhupada explains very clearly, there must be yoga, must be bhakti connected with each of the systems of yoga, otherwise they can't be called yoga. You with me? Bhakti must be, some element of bhakti must be there, or it can't even be called yoga. It's called asanas. It can't be called yoga, or pranayama, or meditation. It can't be called dhyana yoga unless the personality of Godhead is in the picture. Can't be, at least not properly. Now today, anything goes because people are uneducated and, you know, whatever. Misguided, bewildered. take the opportunity to like express a little frustration. As this attraction for yoga has become popular, devotees to dovetail and connect the attraction for yoga to help bring Krishna consciousness to others have introduced yoga into their program. We do this at colleges. There's a session of, like at MIT, there's a devotee, nice devotee. She's a yoga instructor, so she does yoga. And then at the end, she's also a singer, so she chants, gets her harmonium out, and sometimes her husband is there, and he plays the mridanga, and she sings. And then that's like the yoga, end of the yoga class. And then it's prasadam. It's kind of like a sandwich in between the prasadam part. And then there's the talk. So some people just come from the yoga. Some people come for the yoga and prasadam. Some people come from the yoga, prasadam, and they hear the class. So, you know, it's appreciated. But at least, you know, they know where the train is going. Not just, you know, slim and trim. It's Krishna. But Yogeshwara, he's a Prabhupada disciple. Maybe you've read his name in Lilamrita or have read his name in the letters book. He had a lot of association with Prabhupada in France. He joined in France. He's American, but he speaks French. And he was, maybe you've seen the video of that conversation with the cardinal in Paris, Cardinal Daniel Yu. The translator was Yogeshwara. So you find it in Science of Self-Realization, just the transcription, but Yogeshwara was the translator. Anyway, so he's now living in New York, and one of the things that he does is he gave a Bhagavad Gita seminar at one of the yoga centers. And they really, he's like charming and funny and brilliant and very eloquent. So they liked it so much they did it. They did a rerun, and then now they have him as like the coordinator of the public speakers at that yoga center. And it's a very one of the three most popular yoga centers in New York. So here's my frustration expressed through Yogeshwara. We were having lunch last time I was in New York at the temple. And he said, you know, I don't like this idea of bhakti being back-burnered. He said, when I give my classes, I start, like newcomers, they don't know who I am. The first thing I say is, let me be right up front here. You're not the body, number one. Number two, Krishna is God. And as spirit soul, you're part and parcel of Krishna. And number three, his message is understood in Bhagavad Gita. And number four, sometimes my jokes aren't very good. So long as you're okay with those four things, we're good. We can keep going. But if you're uncomfortable with that, you know, let me know. So he said, because after doing this for a number of years now, the term bhakti yoga and things like that, people don't have a clue what it means. And then he said, people will say, yeah, I'm into bhakti. Hey, let's go have pizza and a beer. You know, and it just like boils my blood. I can't take it. So when there's this, I'm venting, there's this indirect thing where you just like, Krishna's not in the picture, and then somehow or another, he just like a jack-in-the-box, he just shows up, there's Krishna. And people don't like that. They want, you know, be up front. Who? Krishna. That's his message. And he says, I haven't seen this indirect thing in the yoga circuit work at all unless you're really clear about what's at the center, where's the train going. Where is all of this to take us? You may start with some preliminary thing. That's okay. But where's the train going? Anyway, that's his experience, and he's gifted. He can be with worldly people, and they're very comfortable with him, and he's very comfortable with them, but he knows what his mission is. His mission is, he's Krishna's representative, and he's the instrument of Krishna to give Krishna to others. That's who he is. He's not unclear about who he is. He can be, you know, very relaxed and help other people feel real relaxed and, you know, very comfortable with him. He's such a charming, eloquent, brilliant personality, funny, you know, sharp intellect. But he's Krishna's representative. People know that. And they're fine with it. So, back to the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada's expressing in real strong terms, yoga minus the Supreme Personality of Godhead is nowhere. At the present moment, who will be successful in the rigid performance of the many yoga rules and regulations? Moreover, perfection is attained only by those who are surrendered souls. Where there is no mention of the personality of Godhead, where is there surrender? And when there is no meditation upon the personality of Godhead, where is the yoga practice? Unfortunately, people in this age, especially persons who are of a demoniac nature, want to be cheated. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead sends great cheaters who mislead them in the name of yoga and render their lives useless and doomed. Pretty heavy, huh? In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is clearly stated in the 17th chapter, verse 17, that rascals of self-made authority, being puffed up by illegally collected money, perform yoga without following the authoritative books. They are very proud of the money they have plundered from innocent persons who wanted to be cheated. End of purport. So all of that came out of, you know, Maitreya's practice. Prabhupada wanted to protect those who were hearing from him from, you know, things that may look like the real deal, but they're not. And he's giving us some indications of how we can tell what the real deal is. What's the authentic practice that's going to deliver the goal. And as his followers, we're to be very clear what authenticity is, what it looks like. What are some of the necessary elements that must be there with something that's authentic? And we as practitioners of that which is authentic, we should, like Kardamuni, keep our mind on the goal. The goal of perfection, being intimately connected with Krishna. So, what was his assignment? We heard in the previous verse, Lord Brahma, his father, said, please assist me in producing good praja to populate the universe. So, that's his assignment, but the approach is fixing his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead through 10,000 years of penance. So at the end, both were accomplished. He produced good praja, and he was intimately connected with the Personality of Godhead. So that which appears to be material becomes spiritualized by Krishna consciousness. And, you know, whatever it is that we have in life, we have our necessities of life. You know, as soon as I finish breakfast and off you go to work. So, you know, some devotees, you know, newer devotees in particular, get a little bewildered, or students get a little bewildered and think, you know, why should I do my studies, or why should I, what, you know, I don't want to do these material things. And, you know, I don't blame them. But it has its place, depending upon one's nature, in rendering service to Krishna. Like, I'll end with this, the Sri Brahma Samhita. The last five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita are all on this theme. After Brahma has his realization through the Govinda Stotra verses of Sri Brahma Samhita, there he is, standing before Krishna, because Krishna gave him his second mantra, and it's the direct conversation. Krishna, Brahma to Krishna, and Krishna's reply, I have this material desire. And in his case, it was create a universe. In our case, it may be something less than create a universe, but something that's involving ourselves with the material energy. I have this desire. And I'm apprehensive that this material desire is going to take me away from Krishna. So, what to do? And what to do is exactly what's described here in this purport. It's detailed, but if you ever have this question or have to answer the question that other people ask, how do I, you know, this word balance the material and spiritual part of my life, read that section or refer someone to that section. And it's not a short answer, is you don't balance, you spiritualize the material portion, and so it becomes all spiritual. It's not, how do I balance? You have to do the hearing and chanting activity in order to spiritualize the other activities. Just like as Prabhupada is saying in this purport. And so whether it's yoga or meditation or work or study or whatever it is that's dealing with the material energy, it stays on the material platform without the direct activities of bhakti. And when the direct activities of bhakti, I'm just like making it really short, but when the direct activities of bhakti are there, when the other activity is done for the purpose of satisfying the personality of God, it becomes as elevating and spiritualizing and purifying, as beneficial as the direct activities of bhakti. No, go the other way. Without the direct activities of bhakti, it stays on the material platform. And that then comes in, you know, this morality thing that says, well, this is good and that's bad. This is virtuous and that's impious. And it stays on the material platform. The result keeps one in the material platform. The result keeps one in the cycle of birth and death. So you can do it again and again and again in different ways. So that's not the goal of Bhagavad Gita, or the goal of the Vedas, is again and again, it's terminating the cycle of repetition of birth and death. But the goal is not just terminating the cycle. The goal is devotional service connecting with the personality of Godhead. Connect the soul means you also connect the body and the mind with the personality of Godhead. You do those things for Krishna. And how do you keep Krishna consciousness in the front as you're doing those things for Krishna? Through the direct activities of bhakti, without which it stays on the material platform. That's a key message, over and over, stated in Bhagavad Gita, stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. So many different ways of expressing the same thing. Very, very important message. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yeah.
So, Maharaj, as you mentioned, the Gita Lahari retreat, yeah. Like how the students were expecting Hatha Yoga and
yeah.
They came. And when they came, they did the yoga part plus added Krishna at the end. So, in our temple also, we have these yoga classes on Saturday and Sunday because we wanted to be connected. So, we have people coming in here, teaching them, trying to attend the revival sessions, and then now they are attending the Bhakti Gita course. So, how do you think, Maharaj? Should we keep continuing this?
I'm not going to get involved in the management of the Seattle Temple. I think I'll just leave it at that. But you know, there's a strategy, and you know, different inspired teachers have different approaches for how they'd like to extend Krishna consciousness to others, or give the opportunity to associate with devotees to others. It's one thing where the venue is not the temple. It's another thing where the venue is the temple.
So it's good if the venue is the temple.
It's a strategy, and I'm not going to second guess. Or each person, just like we're all individuals. So individuals have like this approach or that approach with how you do your bookkeeping, or how you dance, or how you do anything, how you manage, and how you preach. So there are different approaches for different persons that are inspired in different ways. The model of the venue where those indirect things are part of your strategy. Seeing the yoga class taking place at MIT is a lot different than the yoga class taking place in the temple. I understand the strategy. The strategy is get people used to coming to the temple and coming to the temple and coming to the temple. The next thing you know, they're seeing the deities. The next thing you know, they're buying the books and taking prasadam, and they're associating with devotees. That's the strategy. I've seen this strategy, a different strategy, produce very nice results with a different atmosphere in the temple. So when people go to the temple, it's Vaikuntha. And there isn't any, non-Vaikuntha stuff going on in Vaikuntha. And so, it's conducive also to the temple residents feeling the sanctity and the shelter and the purity and the safety and the from that experience. And it helps to grow the temple devotees. It helps to grow temple devotees. Because the atmosphere is very nice. And if it becomes the other, and then something else starts to happen in the temple, from the temple devotees and the temples, the people that come to the temple, it's not a sacred place anymore. It's a multi-purpose place. Different approaches, different strategies. This can be successful, that can be successful. So, ask your question to the person who sets the strategy. Then.
Do you think that we should be very cautious about
it? One should be aware of a particular choice of action, and let's say strategy is going to produce a certain atmosphere, and then what is the atmosphere going to invite? when I was a new devotee, I'll just share this. You know, the culture when I became a devotee from the group of persons from which I became a devotee, it was, you know, rock and roll, you know, the whole, you know. So one of the first things, it was like an attraction for young people. So when I became a devotee, one of the first things we did was we went into Harinam and book distribution at a rock concert. And I was thinking, you know, whoa. Well, first it was less like lots of fun. Then I was thinking about it afterwards and saying the mentality before was to go there in the mood of enjoyment. The mentality now as a devotee is to go to give people the opportunity to receive Krishna conscious literature, the holy name, and prasadam. Because we had a table for prasadam and books and harinam. It was like lots of fun. Krishna conscious fun, not the other kind. And it wasn't like, you know, go and listen to the music. Although sometimes the weaker devotees went and listened to the music, and guess what happened? They left Krishna consciousness. But in the temple, we didn't have rock concerts in the temple. It was, you know, sanctity and purity. And, you know, fast forward over time, and that was the model. The temple is sacred. And outside the temple is where we do outreach things, and we do all kinds of creative, novel things. But the temple is sacred. I'm used to that model. I really like that model. That's personal. So, you know, other persons have other ideas, and that's okay. And, you know, one can look and see the results. And one can look and see the results. So numbers is not the only thing. It's, you know, the standards of purity of Krishna consciousness that, you know. And you know, not just, anyway, the overall purity of Krishna consciousness. I said that's something that I hold important. I see it. It's like our goal to make ourselves pure. There's a mode in Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. He says that's devotional service in the mode of goodness, where purifying my existence is the goal of my devotional service. He just characterizes devotional. Devahuti asks the question, devotional service is pure. Is it possible that that which is pure can be mixed with the modes of nature? And he says, yes. Then he describes devotional service in ignorance, devotional service in passion, devotional service in goodness. So, you judge a thing by its result. Is purity the product? And if the aspiration is purity, won't the model follow the aspiration? What's the purity? Oh, which could you? What's the aspiration? What's the goal? And is it being achieved? And that with that purity, what's the outcome of that purity? It's becoming firmly attached to Krishna. That's what our scripture teaches. Narayana Parayana, Vasudeva Parayana. That's the attainment. Vyavasayatmika Bhunti Ekeha Puranandana. Only one thing. If you want to get there, what's the aspiration? The aspiration from the aspiration, the model from what's inside, and you get what's outside, so that you get attain the goal. The gift of Lord Chaitanya is everyone can be purified, but amongst those who become purified, there's this goal of love of God. Anyway. Yeah, we have to be careful. With any model, with any presentation of Krishna consciousness or life, we have to be careful. Anything else? Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, yes. One question regarding the setting of the Bhagavatam. We discussed that little bit on Friday morning, that we know that first the Bhagavatam was spoken by Naraji and Ved Vyas, she wrote it, and then it was with Shukdev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj, and then Sutta Goswami. And in that assembly also, Naraji and Ved Vyas were there.
Yeah.
So we were reading it one time, and in between, in first chapter only, in the first or second chapter, it says, Ved Vyas Uvacha. So I think you mentioned that Ved Vyas, she was talking to Maitreya, and Maitreya Rishi was also talking to Vidura. So is it at the same time, or what
no.
is exactly the
no.
setting for that?
No, not the same time. References made by Maitreya to prior conversations that he had with others. One case, he's referring to a conversation he had with Vyas. It's prior. Another is a reference. Shukadeva Goswami makes reference to a prior conversation he had with when he tells the Ajamila story at the end of chapter 3 in canto 6, he makes reference to, I heard this from, I think it was Gotama. And it's within the Bhagavatam, but it's, you can say, we must be assured, it's confirmed by Vyas. And it's illustrating the essence of the Bhagavatam in the Chapter Sloki verses, those four verses of Canto 2. Exactly how the 18,000 verses came to be, Vyas wrote them. References there to Shukadeva Goswami speaking something to Maharaj Parikshit. The reference is made to who he heard it from. But Vyasadeva was writing it. He says it's authorized. And similarly, trying to remember. Yeah, it's in relation to the creation, where again Maitreya is expressing, I heard these from, and he gives three different sages, and one of them is not, you know, Vyasadeva, but Vyasadeva is writing it, and Maitreya is speaking it. But Maitreya is speaking it, and then Shukadeva Goswami refers to Maitreya speaking it, and Sutta Goswami is referring to Shukadeva Goswami referring to Maitreya speaking it. But your question specifically was like a chronological one. Were they simultaneous? No. I made the point, and Prabhupada also makes the point, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not chronological. It's unfolding. It's something like the unfolding of a flower. You know, it unfolds all at once. And so there's movement in all the parts of the flower, although the outer portion may move more quickly. Have you ever seen slow motion photography of a flower opening? Like that. It's like that. The Bhagavatam is unfolding, so sometimes attention goes here and there, but it's not a linear chronological presentation. It's a transcendental presentation. Okay? Yes?
So, Maharaj, yesterday I was supposed to ask this question, but we didn't have time. So, Vidura is Yamaraj himself. So when Yaksha asks, Yaksha is also the Yamaraj who asks the questions, pass the questions to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So, how did Yudhishthira exist simultaneously in the two places, Maharaj, as a Yaksha and as a Guru?
In Sri Brahma Samhita, reference is there saying that it's in Krishna Sandarbha as well. Krishna can simultaneously exist by expansions in different places, and that ability is also given to demigods who can simultaneously exist in different places. So what exactly is going on in the reference that you made without the assistance of the acharyas, I can't say. I can refer to a principle. They can simultaneously expand themselves and exist in different places at the same time. In the case of Yamaraj, specifically it says, when he was cursed by Manduka Muni, Aryama took his place. So it wasn't an expansion of Yamaraj, it was Yamaraj that became Vidura. And Aryama took his place. But it's possible that in other circumstances it's an expansion. And without the assistance of our acharyas, I don't have a clue. You know, what this situation, that situation. Yes?
Maharaj, about the idea that you mentioned, prototypes of the demigods, doesn't it give some credibility to the general Hindu conception that they have the whole shelf of demigods
that
they worship?
Why would it?
Because it's all expansions of internal potency of Vishnu.
Well, it's not necessarily extensions of the internal potency. There's the whole spiritual world. Let's leave aside the prototype demigod concept. And there's the whole spiritual world. That's a manifestation of the Lord Sandini potency. So what does that have to do with a pantheon of gods? There's many gods. It has nothing to do with it. And now let's go back to the concept of prototype personalities. That the personality of God is surrounded by unlimited numbers of potencies and expansions in the spiritual realm, from which, when the time of material creation is required, the prototypes empower the different personalities doing different functions within the universe. Now, if you had to create a universe, wouldn't that be a sensible way to do it? You have a prototype, and then from you make copies of the prototype. That's a sensible way.
So it makes them portion.
Yeah. So it doesn't have any connection at all with the conception of there are many gods. The conception of there are many gods is missing the source of everything, or the absolute truth.
All of the demigods that have those kind of prototypes?
All the demigods? No. It doesn't say that. You're getting... Hare Krishna. No.
And a couple of days back, I asked if the demigods also including karma reactions. You know,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. So if they have free will, why? How can you be sure that, you know, if I want to do something with the assistance of a demigod, that demigod's free will is not...
You don't have any insurance. They can't act without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Nor can you. You want a guarantee? Go to the Supreme Lord. Not the demigod. He says deliver, they can deliver. He says don't deliver, they can't. And they want, and if he restricts the capacity, they can't. They're dependent. He's independent. You want a guarantee? Go to him.
So they can also insert their own will in between
Sure. But they're, because they're, devotees of Vishnu, generally speaking, they're fulfilling the order of Vishnu. They don't act independently, they act according to the order of Vishnu. They have standards by which they're to perform their duty of regulating the affairs of the universe. And they're, you know, they're committed to that. And they're, you know, they have some capacity endowed and invested in them by the Supreme Lord to do that. But they make mess ups sometimes. Because they're not perfected beings. Their material desires get in the way. That eclipse their devotion. Sometimes. Okay, we're okay. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.